Welcome to the Bear and the Ball. I am your host, Nick Webster. So excited today to have Jan Squara, the commissioner of one of the fastest growing leagues, if not the fastest growing league in the United States of America, the UPSL. Jan, welcome to the Bear and the Ball.
Nick, it is a pleasure. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Really excited to actually have you on the show after all this time and talk about UPSL. Where did it all begin? How did it start? Where was the brainchild?
Yeah. Well, the beauty of that question is it really connects here with Cal South. This league was kickstarted by a gentleman named Leonel Lopez, who founded the league in 2011 here in Santa Ana, California, and was affiliated initially with Cal South. With about 6 to 10 teams to start the league back in 2011. And I connected with Leonel in 2013 and agreed to work together to build, you know, on this project of building out a league. At that time, it was really more of a focus for Southern California, consolidating men's amateur teams, getting everybody under one umbrella. And that's the birth of the league. Here in Southern California.
So what do you put down the remarkable growth of the league? Why is this happening? Because when we look at the soccer landscape in America, unfortunately, it's very fractured. There's a lot of different competing organizations, and yet UPSL seems to be the driving force of adult soccer in the country at the moment.
Mm-hmm. You know, I attribute everything to just good old-fashioned hard work, ethics, doing the right thing every single day, looking out for your customer, looking out for your teams, looking out for one another. We've had that attitude, that commitment from day one. And it's been a grind. It hasn't been an easy ride. A lot of folks think the grass can be greener on the other side, but at the end of the day, we've gone from 10 teams in 2011 to over 500 teams across the U.S. between 40 conferences. And, you know, that's taken a window of, you know, 7 to 10 years of diligent work, finding like-minded folks who agree with the vision and, staying at it daily, steady.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome in the growth of the league over the last 10 years?
You know, because football, soccer is set up the way it's set up here in the U.S., where, if you're an individual and you want to start up a league tomorrow, you know, you're not required to obtain any type of license. You're not required to go through any type of certification. You can literally just go down to your local state office and get started. And so the answer is, you know, there's competition, but being first to market certainly has given us a significant edge. And I think because we have the right model, the model is key. And our model, Nick, has been it's coupled two items: being cost effective. A cost-effective league where you're not breaking the banks for clubs, and you're playing year-round. When we started this, the first year I came on board with Leo, we had just finished our spring-summer season in 2013, and Leo looked at me and says, "All right, you know, great, we had a good season. What do we, you know, what's next?" And I just, as a former player, I said, "Well, you know, we got to keep playing. You can't become a better player unless you're playing year-round. Let's continue." And that was the birth of the year-round league. It was that simple. And that gave us a major, I think, edge, because all the other competing leagues, USL, NPSL, at that time were strictly a spring-summer league with basically a six-month hiatus, if not longer, 6 to 8 months. And so we had a lot of teams that were coming over from other leagues that wanted to compete in the fall. And reiterating cost effectiveness. We've kept our price points at the same level for 10 years, and it's affordable. It's competitive. It's professionally managed. All the above.
So when we look at the vast scope of the United States, a truly massive, massive country, how do you funnel your teams to have a true UPSL champion? I mean, is it possible, or do you think that the size of the country forces you to be regional?
Well, you know, when we started the project in 2011/13, I think it's fair to say we didn't really have national aspirations at that point. What we did, our plan at that time was to consolidate a fragmented men's adult amateur market and do that in Southern California. And if you can do that in Southern California, you literally can do it in any market, because Southern California, from me to you and everybody else, we know Southern California is one of the top soccer markets in the United States, if not the top market, for talent and numbers. So when we were successful here in Southern California, going from 10 to, say, 50 teams between two divisions, a Premier and a Division One, and then we spread out, we went to Arizona, we went to Nevada, we went to Northern California, and we moved to Colorado. Once we were able to really establish Southern California and the model, we were able to cookie cutter it into other states. And that process, again, took some time. It took, you know, six years to get just to Colorado. And once we got through Colorado, I think the credibility, the vision was clear with many people, and we found some very good folks, Christian Vallejos in Florida, who's just done a phenomenal job in opening the corridor on the Eastern Seaboard. And it spread from there, and now we're basically operating out of every state in the continental U.S. With conference managers representing the UPSL, feet on the ground in each respective market.
So, talk to me a little bit about the brains behind UPSL. You mentioned yourself and Leo. What was Leo's background?
You know, Leo and I go back a long ways, and not many people know this, but we were both members of the NPSL. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that we were probably at a certain point looking for something that was a little bit, a little different, a little more cost effective. You know, we had worked hard at building out the Western Conference of the NPSL, did some connecting back in the day in terms of bringing in teams and populating the Western Conference of the NPSL. But again, we were looking probably for something different. At the end of the day, what Leo and I were looking for was profitability. We were operating, each one of us were operating a club. And as you know, in the amateur space, it's a very difficult business. You've got to come out alive every single season. And so Leo said, you know, I'm going to just try something different. I'm going to move away and I'm going to start a league. And that was the birth of the UPSL. We got back together because, again, we connected through the NPSL. And I agreed with the vision and agreed to partner with Leo and start the process.
So with the growth of the league, Graham Walsh came on board. Describe Graham. Obviously, I know him well. Great guy. Mm-hmm. Describe his involvement in UPSL and how you've grown and changed since he's come on board.
Yeah. Well, with the growth of the UPSL, as you mentioned, we were able to attract investment and people, the right people, came to the table. And certainly, I was introduced to Graham Walsh, in 2019. Long story short, Graham and I met. We had a few meetings in person. Graham had expressed an interest in basically investing into the league. We were looking for the right partner, somebody that could certainly come in and have a significant impact, but not interrupt the vision. You know, if it's the wrong party, if it's the wrong group, if it's the wrong individual, we're gonna just go the other way. But Graham really came to the table with quite a background of passion with the game. I like the fact that Graham, you know, comes is from another country, from England. So he looks at it from more of an international perspective. Not to say that a U.S. perspective is not what we were looking for, but I like the fact that he came to the table with an international perspective. His business acumen is top of the table. On a personal level, working with Graham has been just phenomenal. He's a very intense guy and really looks to achieve and strive on a daily basis. Also, Lewin Frazier works partnered with Graham, and Lewin is our COO. So between Lewin and Graham, myself and Christian, and that's our board basically. We're a good team. We work well together, and that's been a big impact to having Graham come in as CEO and take this league to the next level.
So you mentioned Graham comes in at 2019, and of course 2020, we all know what happens. The global pandemic shuts everything down. How big of an impact was that on your league, and what was your thinking as the pandemic's happening and soccer's being shut down, and are you thinking, how's this league going to survive, or were you already making plans about what the future could look like post-pandemic?
Yeah, hey, you know, you take me back to memory lane. I mean, you know, Graham invests in the league. Literally a month later, COVID hits, and it's like it's a tidal wave, as you know. It's a tidal wave. And, you know, one of the first things to shut down outside of dry cleaners is leagues, you know. You know, we get on the phone, we get on a conference call. And what I really liked about that moment was the fact that nobody panicked. We talked about it. And then, you know, you have to look at it from Graham's perspective or ELP's perspective. You know, they had just made a significant investment into the league. And, you know, I think that anybody would probably have the same set of glasses on. And that was, what do we need to do to just continue forward and get around this? Because nobody at that time really knew what the effect of COVID was going to be, how long it was going to last. Maybe this was a short-term hiccup, 1 or 2 months. And so at the end of the day, we all elected to just really continue on, not shut down operations like many other leagues did at that time. Literally within a 60-day window, I seem to recall USL announced that they were, you know, turning off the lights for the season. NPSL did the same thing. We stood strong. We identified markets that were operable, that were markets where we could roll out the schedule. You know, operate in a format where we are compliant on the COVID side. And, you know, off we went. And certainly it wasn't an easy ride because we did have outbreaks within clubs, and therefore games were canceled and we had to push them back. But at the end of the day, we worked through COVID and we grew through COVID, ironically. You know, you would not think that growth would be part of that moment or that period. But as everybody, when you look back in the rearview mirror, there was significant opportunity with COVID and many companies grew significantly. And I think it really, the fact that we worked during that 12 to 24 month window where a lot of people really took their foot off the pedal, gave us an edge and, you know, really propelled us into 23 and 24.
So talk about the challenges and frustrations then. You know, we mentioned the size of the country and you alluded to it where, you know, you have different regions where different laws, different COVID environments were in place.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, I looked at my friends in Florida, for instance, and they're out doing everything and playing and living life normal. And uh-huh. Yet here we are in California and, you know, you were barely allowed out of the house.
Yeah.
How did that play on you mentally? Because I could see that the frustration of looking, you know, across the country and seeing the game we love being played, and then in your home, nothing.
Well, you know, you really nailed it on the head. What we had to do is identify markets that were playable. Markets that were playable, markets that were not playable. And so we attacked those markets that were playable, and we established our protocol and worked with the government protocol, the federal protocol that was on the table at that time. And, you know, basically matched it up so that we could execute on the operation side and follow federal protocol. And we were able to get the bulk of our games in. As you recall, many folks wanted to continue and, you know, really didn't want to follow federal protocol, or didn't see eye to eye with the protocol. However, I think we were really good at matching the federal protocol and identifying the markets that were playable, and then working that. But I will tell you again that in many of the markets where it was playable, we had some hiccups in terms of breakout, and then we had to follow federal protocol, 2 weeks quarantine for that particular club, and then, you know, we had to rework the schedule. But again, all in all, it was certainly an experience for me, for the entire board. You know, it's not like COVID comes around every day. So I think it made us stronger. I think it made us tougher. You know, now the grass is green. COVID is in the rearview mirror. And, you know, we continue to grow at a significant rate. We have a lot of teams on a daily basis contacting the league, wanting to become a member of the league, because I think we have proven that we are a management team that is capable, that is committed, and you know, wants to do the right thing for the sport overall, and be a player in terms of being part of the U.S. soccer ecosystem.
And that's my next question then, becoming a player in the ecosystem, because obviously when the league started, you didn't have a seat at the federation table.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a seat at the federation table. You have voting rights. Your UPSL is now, let's be honest, a player, a dominant player, an influential player. How's that changed the mentality by being at the seat at the table with the Cindy Cones, with the Sunil Galatis, with people that are the movers and shakers of U.S. soccer?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's certainly an honor to be at the table. At the same time, our attitude is that I think we have a lot to share and contribute to the overall U.S. soccer ecosystem in terms of helping getting it to the next level and getting it right. You know, let's call it what it is. There's, you know, U.S. soccer is still young. It's a young sport in this country in its own ways. You know, we're behind, and if you look at, you know, other countries where football has been played for quite some time. So we're learning, we're getting better. I think we've been opening eyes, and we continue to open eyes on the importance of the space that we're in, which is the amateur space. Let's call it what it is. The top players for the U.S. national team, they're born and bred in the UPSL. They're born and bred in the academy leagues. I think it's fair to say that we respect all the amateur and academy and youth leagues that are out there, and we really have an approach of uniting and working together. And a great example of that is our work together with Cal South recently on the Cal South State Cup that has been, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just been established here in Southern California for over 50 years. And we got together and we sat down at a table and we looked at what the state association, Cal South, was looking to accomplish. I think you were looking at what we could contribute in terms of being a partner. And we formed a partnership to work together on the actual state cup tournament, where we had a very successful tournament with the top amateur teams in Southern California. And at the end of the day, we had a champion that hoisted the trophy with a record crowd at Championship Stadium in Orange County, soccer-specific stadium. I think we did our job, all of us.
Yeah, incredible event. I mean, for me to be chair of Cal South and to be, working this event and seeing so many people at the stadium. I mean, the following week I was watching the Open Cup, and we'll talk about the Open Cup in a second, and Zeta FC were playing Mesoamerica, two teams that we're very familiar with, and the crowd wasn't as big for that game, for an Open Cup game, as for our final. So very, very gratifying, and just delighted that our partnership is showing great fruit, and can't wait to see what happens over the coming years, because I think it's going to get better and better. So let's transition then into the US Open Cup, and that's a tournament that very dear to you and I. You know, I think we've both had success in this tournament, and now UPSL teams are getting those berths into the Open Cup. Talk to me about how that excites you, how that grows the league, and where do you think a UPSL team, how far do you think they could go?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I always say on any given night, you know, it's all about what the 11 players on the field can put out. And you know, you can get that special moment, that special night out of really any club. And we like to believe that, you know, we have some very, very good clubs that are in the UPSL that represent the UPSL. And if you get the right players and the right coach and the stars all line up, I mean, you know, going the distance is certainly possible. It's going to take a lot of hard work. It's going to take some resources. It's going to take the right coaching, all that combined coming together. And I think it's been a great tournament for our league to participate. We've had over 40 plus or minus teams each year for the last 6-7 years that have competed in the U.S. Open Cup qualifiers, which is, you know, the number one representation in any amateur league in the United States. You know, and now with our membership, with our position with the U.S. Soccer Federation, our spring winner, you know, now gets to take that slot that we've been awarded as a first round into the first round of the U.S. Open Cup. And that's something that we've been waiting for 10 years. And we were provided that slot within the last year, and rewarded that slot in the last year by the U.S. Open Cup committee, and recognized by the U.S. Open Cup committee.
And I would venture further that there should be more slots open to UPSL. Why do you think that the when I look at the U.S. Open Cup, you know, it's like I said, it's a tournament very dear to my heart because of the success I had with Eric Winalda and Cal FC, where we actually made it to the fourth round as an amateur team, one of the furthest an amateur team's ever gone. This year's edition of the Open Cup, you know, MLS put their noses up in the air and said, we're not going to send our teams. And there was, you know, the back and forth between the Federation and MLS. MLS eventually, I think, gave 10 teams and then supplemented that with MLS Next clubs. The U.S. Open Cup is the oldest knockout competition in America. It's the oldest trophy to win in America, all sports, baseball, American football, ice hockey, you name it. The magic of cups, you just described it, everything coming together on one night. Don't you think that UPSL, and let's be honest, other amateur, more clubs should get the opportunity to have that special one night?
Yeah. And I think that's been a big part of the growth of the UPSL, is that what we've always looked at the U.S. Open Cup as an integral part of our schedule. All our members are eligible to compete in the U.S. Open Cup qualifiers. All they need to do is just compete in the spring season and play the minimum required number of league matches, which is 10, which all our clubs do, and now that club is eligible to compete in the U.S. Open Cup qualifier, which from our perspective, we like to look at it almost as a U.S. Open Cup round one. Obviously, the stakes are not as high, meaning you're not deep into the rounds, but it is a U.S. Open Cup qualifier. It's a very meaningful game. It's a cup match. It's got that intensity. It's got that fire. And so we have, 20 games, 20 qualifiers that U.S. Open Cup teams, again, plus or minus, that we are competing in. And we also have that slot. More teams into the first round. I think that will come, Nick. I think our hard work and our commitment delivered that Open Cup slot. You don't get that slot unless you've earned it. And, there's politics, there's red tape. We've had to go through that. And, we're not frustrated in any way that we only have one slot. We're appreciative that we have that slot now. We hit that goal, and in the future, we'll see where things go.
And you just mentioned a great word, Jan, politics. And obviously, I don't want to delve too much into it because otherwise we'd be talking for the next 4, 5, 6 hours. but the politics of soccer in this country is, for me, very frustrating and somewhat confusing, because in most countries in the world, and you mentioned it earlier, our professional leagues are very young. They're still maturing, but there really is a distinct pathway for clubs. And I look at some of the success some of these UPSL teams have had, and you can't help but think to yourself, what would that look like at the next level? So how do we keep growing soccer in this country, Jan, and allow teams to, from UPSL, go to whatever that is? Is it Division III? Is it NISA? Is it USL I? I mean, do you want to see that pathway, and is it viable for UPSL clubs, and what in the political landscape has to change? I know, a massive question. Yeah. Yeah. And answer it in 5 minutes, yeah, please.
Well, when I, Nick, we've had many conversations, and at the end of the day, when I hear what you just said, I mean, the two words that pop up are promotion, relegation. And at the end of the day, I will tell you that's certainly been in the forefront of the UPSL from day one. And I think that we have been leading the charge so that we could see one day promotion, relegation. Obviously, that's far away, just the way football is structured here in the U.S., with MLS and USL being separate entities, and you have separate entities across the board, unlike, Germany or England, where, you have a federation and, 1 through 10. Right, division, and you start at 10 and you work your way up. Not rocket science, but we've complicated it a little bit. I think what we're doing is we're actually working it backwards. We're unwinding the weave and the knots that have been created by the way the game has been structured. And U.S. soccer, I certainly feel that U.S. soccer, the federation, realizes that, if we could do it all over again, maybe we would do it differently, but it is what it is today. And we want to be a part of that unweaving and unwinding and get the kinks out. We now operate in, over 40 markets with multiple divisions, Premier Division being our top tier, Division One. So when a new team comes into our league, let's say, as an example, in New York, New Jersey, the new team, unless they're coming in from another competing league like NPSL or MLS Next or USL, they have to come into Division One and prove that they deserve to be in the Premiership, just like in England, right? So we have the promotion relegation model in motion, but it's just in our system, unfortunately. And the frustrating part for me, for you, and for the passionate people that are out there in the soccer community in the U.S., when we see a team that's really being successful on the field, and I'll use the UPSL as an example. When we have a successful UPSL story, a club that's doing great, winning on the field, winning off the field, ultimately they depart and they leave the league, and they have to go to another league. And so we lose a quality club versus that club being still under one umbrella. And so at the end of the day, we'll continue to work. We'll work with the federation. We'll voice our opinion. We communicate with other leagues, brainstorm, and we'll see where it goes. But right now, that's reality, and we're certainly hopeful for that promotion relegation to connect sometime in the future. Maybe in the next 5, 10, 20 years, that will you and I will be having a conversation, and things have changed.
What is your relationship with other leagues? Because I know that, I think you've been very open and welcoming, and you actually have MLS Next clubs competing in UPSL. So what is your relationship like with MLS, MLS Next, mm-hmm. USL, MPSL?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have a very positive relationship with all leagues. I think it would be silly not to maintain that type of mode and posture, because we are all in the same game. We're all doing this for the same reasons. There's only 18 spots on a team, and there's thousands and thousands of players across America. And so, when a team is belly full with their roster and they have a solid roster, it doesn't mean they have to stop building their club and building their program. The UPSL is certainly a home for that next team. And that's what I think that's what MLS has found with the UPSL. You've got tremendous talent, and I'll use a club like LAFC. They've been able to utilize the UPSL as a springboard for their first team, meaning, these talented young Southern California players that they're recruiting in our backyard here that are the next stars of tomorrow, they're playing them, they're playing league matches in the UPSL, spring, summer season, fall, winter season. They're playing year round. They're becoming better players, so that when they get that call up to that first team, which has happened multiple times with LAFC, they're ready to go because they're playing tough physical, technical matches every single weekend. We have 18 MLS Academy teams that are competing in our league, which is making the league, which complements our league, which adds competition to our league, gives us better facilities to play out of, because they have their home games and they utilize their training grounds or stadiums, what it may be. And what I think is fantastic is non MLS teams are winning games against MLS Academy teams. It's not a walk in the park for them. And you can talk to any of the MLS clubs. They'll be the first to tell you that, these games are very competitive. It's exactly what they're looking for. They're looking for competitive games. They're not looking to travel 6 hours. They don't want to travel 6 hours and get on a bus or get on a plane and burn cash and be in the red at the end of the season. They want it to be a break-even or a profitable opportunity for their reserve squad or their U19s or their U17s, what it may be. And I think that's the platform that the UPSL is serving today, is that the player that can be the star of tomorrow, whether it's in MLS or in Europe or Mexico or in South America, what it may be.
Last question for you. Webster FC, I've built a new team.
Oh,
I want them to play in UPSL. how do I begin the process? How do I get in touch with you? How do I make it all happen so that my stars today become stars tomorrow?
Nick, as commissioner and head of expansion of the UPSL, I have the magic answer for you. It's taken me 12 years to be able to do this, but the step one is the link that I'm going to text you on your phone. It's a new team application. It's a link. You simply take 5 minutes, fill it out, and you get an email back with a number of documents, rules, UPSL rules, regulations, handbook, minimum standard requirements, financial parameters so you know exactly what you're walking into, benefits of being a member of the UPSL, all that bundled together in a nice email right into your box. You review everything, you sign off on everything, you make your season dues payment, and boom, we announce that you're a member of the UPSL through social media, and you go and secure your sponsors and start recruiting, and off we go, and you're inserted into the schedule for the upcoming fall season. It's that simple.
Watch out, people. Webster FC will be on the warpath. Jan Squara.
I like the name, Nick. I love the name.
Jan Squara, Commissioner of UPSL. Thank you so much for joining Bear on the Ball. And for more on CalSouth, visit us at calsouth.com. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We'll be back next week. And keep your eye open for UPSL clubs around your area. It is the league of the future where the stars of today will become the stars of tomorrow. Jan Squara, thank you so much for joining the Bear and the Ball.
Nick, it's been great. Great to talk with you.